It's to the best of our knowledge from PRX. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Do you ever crave silence? How far would you go to find it?
Antarctica is the quietest place I ever been.
That's the Norwegian explorer Erling Kagge.
I'd been forced by the company who owned the plane that flew me to bring a radio. The last thing I did in the plane was to leave the batteries in the rubbish bin. Alone on the ice, I could both hear and feel the silence. Everything seemed completely flat and white, mile after mile, all the way to the horizon. I walked alone to the South Pole. There was no human noise apart from the sounds I made. In complete isolation, I began to notice that nothing was completely flat. Uniform whiteness was transformed into countless shades of white. Tints of blue surfaced on the snow, somewhat reddish, greenish, and slightly pink. The landscape seemed to be changing along the route, but I was wrong. My surroundings remained constant. I was the one who changed.
In 1993, Erling Kagge became the first person to cross Antarctica alone. It took him 50 days. And the thing that had the biggest impact on him was the silence. So think about that. When was the last time you had more than an hour or two of complete silence? And I don't mean just sitting alone in a quiet room, because you can do that and still feel bombarded by mental noise. Emails, texts, news alerts, to-do lists. In which case, what is silence? Do we need it? And where do we find it without going to the South Pole? Steve Paulson asked Erling Kagge for some advice.
Erling, how do you define silence?
I think about silence not as the opposite to sounds, but more like the opposite to noise. And noise, I'm thinking about obviously heavy sounds, but also all these distractions you have throughout the day from our smartphones, tablets, TV, also visual noise and sense of traffic and lights. That's the opposite of silence. And I think that's the biggest challenge in the daily life today, that we're willingly having all these distractions that kind of makes it really hard to appreciate ourselves, that kind of noises about running away from yourself, running away in the sense that being connected with a smartphone, tablet, TVs, other people, while silence is about focusing on yourself, not in the sense that you should be even more egocentric or turning your back to the world. To me, it's about the opposite. It's about silence. It's about opening up, seeing people, and love life even more.
So this is a very expansive definition of silence. You're not just talking about sound. You're talking about something much bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this silence, of course, it's nice to be surrounded by silence, but somehow you can't wait for, you know, silence to appear. So sometimes, especially in the cities, you need to create your own silence. You need to search for the silence within, the silence which is there all the time. Your silence will be different from my silence, and the silence I had yesterday is different from one today, because in this silence, you meet yourself.
Now, you have gone to extreme measures to experience this kind of silence that you're talking about. I mean, you are the only person in history who has traveled to both the North and the South Poles and climbed Mount Everest on foot without any help and without any radio contact. How did those experiences shape your understanding and your appreciation of silence?
You know, I think in particular, I was the first to do this. People have done it afterwards. But in particular, for me to walk to the South Pole, totally by myself, 50 days and nights under the midnight sun, changed my attitude towards silence, because I experienced how enriching silence could be and how important it is. People talking about silence today, it's not a trend. not a fad. This is something deeply human we have needed for thousands of years and also need this year and the years to come. And when you walk there by yourself, no radio contact, you start to see that sometimes your brain can be wider than the sky.
Let's just pause for a moment and put this in context. I mean, you walked for 50 days alone in the Antarctic. That is just mind-boggling. I can't even imagine, you know, having that much time alone, and not to mention the danger involved.
But, you know, when you hear about it on the radio, it sounds a bit crazy and mind-boggling, but actually doing it, it's not that crazy in the sense that all you need to do is to put one leg in front of the other enough times, and you get to the South Pole.
It's that easy.
Even a mouse can eat an elephant to take small portions.
But you're pulling a sled during all of this, right?
So I had a sled with everything I needed for the whole trek. And because nobody had done this before, I was uncertain how many days I was going to spend. So I had food for 66 days and then fuel for 70 days, my sled. And I was eating about 1 kilo every day. So I start out with 120 kilos, which is probably 260 or 70 pounds, and it got 2 pounds lighter every day.
So you were a lot lighter by the end of the trip.
Yeah, the sled was lighter and I was lighter because, of course, you burn off, you know, much more calories than I actually put in.
Yeah. Now, that is also just a lot of time alone with your own thoughts. And a lot of people just wouldn't be able to handle that much time in their own head.
Yeah, but you know, I think that's only partly correct in the sense that if you actually are in that situation, I think humans' talent for actually adapting to the circumstances they're in is huge. So I think most people would appreciate actually being by themselves, maybe not for 50 days and nights in Antarctica, but you know, for a little slightly more than they are. And now, of course, some people are too much alone, so it's a big problem. But in general, I think, you know, people would be better off if they had a bit more silence in their daily lives. So that's also why I sat down to write this book, because I felt I had something not only personal, but also something really important to tell about.
Can you describe what it was like? I mean, the landscape and the silence of those 50 days in Antarctica?
Yeah, what's interesting is that when you start out walking, you feel that everything is flat and everything is white all the way to the horizon. But as days and weeks pass by, you start to see all these details that it's not absolutely white. You have variations of white. It's a bit reddish, bluish, pinkish appearing in the snow. And it's not that flat either. You have these structures everywhere. So you see all the details. You get more and more aware of the surroundings. And also, I had the same experience as most people have if they're off the nature for a long time, that you kind of feel that your body doesn't stop by your fingers, by your skin. You kind of extend it into the nature. So you start to have a kind of a dialogue with the surroundings. You send some thoughts out and you get all the ideas back again.
Now, you have traveled all over the world. Do you think there are different cultural experiences of silence? Is silence sort of defined in different ways?
In the Eastern culture, silence is much more important in the daily life and it's higher valued. But also, like a place in Japan, if you listen to people speak Japanese to each other, you have all these silent breaks. So you understand much of the communication is within those silent slots.
Which is interesting because by comparison, I think in a lot of American conversations, like when you know, either just with family or getting together with friends, there are uncomfortable silences. I mean, if people aren't just talking, there's sort of like, what's wrong?
Yeah, exactly. You know, as a journalist, if you interview someone and after a while you turn silent, that person, you know, just have to start to speak. And that's quite often when people say the stupid things, which is important to journalists.
The secret trick of journalists is the uncomfortable silence.
Not even secret. I think it's obvious.
Now, you also write about what you call visual silence. What is that?
You just walk the streets in the city, you have all this traffic, and in the evenings you have all this light, and that's, to me, visual noise. I think, you know, many places on Earth, you're not able to see stars anymore due to this visual noise. That's a bit sad because I think to look up into starry heaven is some of the best things you can do in life.
And I mean, that's interesting that you would define that as silence as opposed to, you know, being out in nature.
When I started out writing, I thought about silence as places with very little sound, but I felt that was too limiting.
Hmm. And I suppose coming from Norway, especially when you're not in the city there, that would be part of the experience of being Norwegian. I mean, just sort of being out there under those starry skies.
Exactly. I think, you know, almost all over Norway, you would see the starry night. But, you know, also most over the states, you will see starry nights, but not in the big cities.
And I'd love to end by having you read the very last pages of your book.
Yeah. Which paths lead to silence? It is easier to find silence than many people think or believe. Leave your electronics at home. Take off in one direction until there's nothing around you. Be alone for 3 days. Don't talk to anyone. Gradually, you will rediscover all the sides of yourself. It feels good to wander on your own. I had to use my legs to go far away in order to discover this, but I know it is possible to reach silence anywhere. You, my own 3 daughters, me. Follow your own path. You have to find your own self, Paul.
That's Norwegian explorer and publisher Erling Kagge. He's reading from his book, Silence in the Age of Noise.